The Football Pod with Paddy and Andy.
But did anything go through your head at that moment? Was that you saying, right?
That was me saying, this is the first time he touched the ball in the final, and thank God I did something half decent with it.
Download the OTB Sports app and subscribe to the GAA podcast feed now.
Monday Night Rugby on Off the Ball.
With Vodafone, official sponsors of the Irish rugby team. Team of us, everyone in.
Now, you're welcome along to Monday Night Rugby. Very happy to say we are joined by Fiona Coughlin. Hi, Fiona.
Hiya, how are you?
And Andrew Trimble, come on in. Hello to you.
Hey, Joe.
Oof, nice microphone, Trimble.
You're welcome.
Look at this. Loads to talk about. We should start with the Orgy Snyman news. He has, Fiona, re-ruptured, I was reading, the same cruciate ligament in the 60th minute against Scarlets. Innocuous enough moment. That brings the sum total to his Munster minutes thus far to 54 minutes, and his contract is up at the end of this season. This just beggars belief.
Oh, it's devastating. To get back, first of all, in the time that he did, to be in contention for South Africa for the Lions tour, and then he'd been burnt, so not being able to go on that, and then coming back from Munster. And you could see last weekend, like, the difference that he makes to that Munster squad, the try he scored, what it meant to him, but also the team around him. And then it was up for a restart and just came down and just looked so innocuous. It's devastating for him. And to re-rupture the same one, like, you'd think that you've done everything, put in the hours with the physio, mentally come through it, and then to do the same thing again.
I know, because he wasn't even rushed back. There was the fire pit incident, and so he even had a, you know, really gentle return, and we'd seen him in action and score a try at Thomond Park against the Stormers. It's always a worry, Andrew, when someone goes up and it's totally innocuous and it looks like a nothing thing and they go down. Generally, it is serious, and so it's proved.
Yeah, whenever that happens, then you can't help thinking that was inevitably, it was going to happen at some stage. It was an accident waiting to happen. And I think Munster supporters are going to be absolutely devastated after last year and then this year. But second time round, I think you think more about the player. I think first time round, it's everybody has, in a long career, everybody has disappointments and long injuries. But getting one like that back to back, then you start wondering, you know, what's the mindset of the player? He's staring down. He knows how difficult it was to come back from the first one, and come back from it again is a real ask. And yeah, it's really tough to take from a Munster perspective as well as an individual one.
Yeah, that must be the thing for him. Like, there's no novelty here, Andrew. There's no sense of, well, let's see how it goes and I'll really attack my physio and I'll come back stronger. He has probably a really deep understanding of just how dull the rehabilitation is going to be, the endless hours in the gym, how slow it's going to be. And I'd say he's in a dark place. And Alan Quinlan was even saying on AM this morning, apparently his mother passed away not so long ago. So you just feel really sorry for a 26-year-old going through this. He must be suddenly going, my God, I'm going to be 27 before I'm back. What's happening here?
Yeah, it's so tough. I suppose from a Munster perspective, it's worse from them that they got a reminder of how good he is. Because as Fiona says there, you could see the impact he has in that pack. And you saw the try he scored against the Sharks, and he just looks so dominant. So it's frustrating from their point of view. They get a reminder of how good he is, and then someone snatches it away. But from his perspective, he's thinking, I got all the way back to playing well. And there's no doubts or no kind of question marks in his head over that, or no issues there. But yeah, you're right. There's no novelty second time around. And that's a good way to put it, because I've had injuries, like broken bones and stuff, like small things that last, you know, 3, 4, 5 weeks maybe. And that's not the end of the world. See, in the middle of a busy season, see, having a, I know Johnny Sexton does it regularly, having a little break like that is actually a sense of relief. And you go, and then you go, okay, build up. What can I get out of this few weeks? I can get, you know, stronger in the gym. I can work on something, work on my past, whatever it is. But there's no novelty factor to this. He's just staring down a long, bleak, miserable corridor for a year. And this will really test him.
Fiona, have you been out with any injuries for a long period like that?
No, thankfully, all of mine have been cosmetic, so I was lucky enough. But like, just for him, he was in contention again to be called up to South Africa for the November internationals. You know, they're short on second rows. He gets back from injury, he's looking sharp, and that's probably what was in his sight as well, as getting back from Munster, was those November internationals, and then that's cruelly snatched away now for another year as well. So, it's just unbearable to think of where he sits at the moment, that he's to go back into that physio room, who I'm sure has been great for him, but the thoughts of having to spend another year with him.
I know. like the surgery, the recovery, and then back to, you know, you remember this squat exercise orgy? Yeah, we're doing this again for the next 2 months. I mean, the misery of it must be huge at the moment. And for Munster, Fiona, then his contract expires at the end of this season. It's a tricky enough predicament for both parties.
Yeah, look, I suppose Munster brought him in knowing the type of player he is and the impact he could have made. They got a glimpse, a very short glimpse of it. But at the end of the day, it'll come down to finances and who's stepping up. I suppose, you know, you have the likes of Fineen Witchley and those stepping up, whether the players can step up and make a name for themselves. But he certainly did add a presence to that pack when they go to the latter stages of Europe and things like that, that he was definitely going to be making a difference. So that's going to be a decision for management in Munster, whether, you know, they see the worth in that still, or whether younger players have stepped up to be able to take that mantle.
Well, that's an interesting question as well, Andrew, is, you know, to kind of segue away from Orgie Snyman and to what it means for Munster, because particularly after the Stormers game, less so Scarlets the weekend, but after the Stormers game, one of the points made in defence of the Munster performance, where all the tries were very much scored by forwards, including Snyman, was that, well, you know, this is a stronger pack and they'll be able to more than match the bigger European side. So it's actually no harm if they're scoring some of these less crafty tries. But now with him out of that pack, a few of those doubts might resurface again over Munster's ability in the latter stages of Europe.
Yeah, I think there's been a little bit of chat about Munster's style of rugby. And I think everybody wants to see an attractive brand of rugby, but I mean, what we remember about Munster, that Munster kind of heart and soul, that kind of Munster identity is being physical and winning whatever way they can and whatever way they have to, and having a little bit of a variety. But typically the Munster way is pretty direct. It's a kicking game, and that's the identity that we all kind of latched onto, and that's why we're all kind of Munster supporters through the noughties. Now we're at the stage now where there's a lot of chat about playing with that kind of variety, and you don't have to do that as much when you've got Snyman, and you can be direct when you've got Chris Farrell and Dialande in your centre as well. So yeah, it does put a little bit more emphasis on Munster can't be anywhere near as direct, or they can't score the sorts of tries that he scored against the Sharks a couple of weeks ago, where he single-handedly just batted off a couple of would-be tacklers and just made his way over kind of on his own. You've got that luxury when you've got big physical specimens like Snyman, but you maybe have to rethink things or be a little bit more creative than you might otherwise be without someone like that.
The performance against the Scarlets, Fiona, up until the 60th minute and the injury, I mean, it was a really positive day for Munster on several fronts. They had made 11 changes from the Stormers game against a Scarlets team with some big names back, and I would suspect looking maybe to take a scalp at home. They were close to full strength, and by all accounts, I didn't get to see this, I was in here yesterday, by all accounts, a brilliant Munster performance. Ben Healy, very good. A bit of youth and energy about the whole thing. And it seems like, I mean, if the injury hadn't happened, they would have been extremely content coming home last night.
Yeah, they really played as if the shackles were off right from the outset. Like, just some subtle differences we saw off their scrum, feigning left, going back right. Ben Healy had a brilliant 50-22 that set them up for the first try. And then the second try actually came off another midfield scrum where they feigned left and passed back right. And twice, for two tries, Ben Healy played really flat in the line, did a double skip pass out to Nash. And just, they were looking to play that width that we've heard so much about and the Larkin blueprint. But it was only able to happen by good set piece or good carries by the forwards and them imposing themselves. But definitely the shackles were off in attack, and it was a really impressive defensive display as well. You know, a lot of these players have put their hand up for selection against Connacht this weekend, although it is a 6-day turnaround. So whether Van Graan decides to use the players that weren't playing last weekend or gives these young fellas another chance, because they hadn't played together. Some of them were playing AIL the week beforehand, and then to come out and have a performance like that was hugely impressive.
Fiona, to what extent is Ben Healy nipping at Joey Carberry's heels?
I think he's very close. I don't think Joey has come back from injury, which obviously we have to give him time, but I think he's had significant time now to come back. I don't think he's played like we've seen him play before that injury as of yet. And then Ben goes up. Ben, last season when he came on as a replacement, was outstanding, but never seemed to take really the control of the game when he started. But he certainly did last weekend against Scarlets, and seemed to have more confidence about him and directing the play. So he's definitely shooting it out with Joey for that starting position at the moment.
because Andrew Carberry has featured in quite a few of our discussions early on this season, because everybody is really hoping he returns very quickly to what we saw at times pre-injury, and we've all seen the potential that's there. As of yet, it hasn't happened. You want to be very patient when somebody's coming back from a big injury like that, and I think he deserves that kind of patience. But what's your read on the Healy Carberry dynamic, and Carberry maybe more generally?
Yeah, I agree with Fiona 100%. Ben Healy was very, very good at the weekend. He seems quite composed. He's a big physical presence, but he just passes and kicks so well, so accurately. Just puts himself under a little bit of pressure, just gets flat to the line and just whips balls out really, really well and gives guys outside him loads of space. Joey Carberry's completely different. He has that to his game, but he's just got an X factor, and that X factor, he's very, very special and he's very, very talented. I think it's premature for question marks. We're a couple of games into the season. I think someone that good, as good and as talented as Joey Carberry is, he will 100% get back to going the way we remember him, the way we've seen his highlights, the way he played fullback for Leinster, to be fair. Mm. We just haven't quite seen it that much for Munster before the injury. He didn't get enough kind of consistent game time. And then obviously this has been pretty disruptive for him. He's just getting back into now. I think if we give Joey Carberry time, he will definitely come good. He's too talented not to.
Because I would wonder, Andrew, as well, it must be a touch easier for a more nuts and bolts player to get back to a certain level. You used the phrase there, X factor, about Carberry. I would presume an X factor player might need that bit more time.
I think, yeah, that's fair enough. And I think someone like Ben Healy, I think you're more sure of what you're going to get from Ben Healy. Now, what he does is very, very effective. There's a lot to be said for someone who passes and kicks well, makes good decisions. He reads the game quite well. He's a good operator, a talented operator, but it's just a slightly different style, and it's a slightly more structured style. Maybe that might work. Maybe you build a team around whoever plays there, or maybe you find the right type of profile to fit this Munster team. And again, coming back to your original point there about Snyman, if things change in your makeup up front, you might require someone like Joey Carberry. Whereas if you've got a bit more structure, you've got a little bit more set-piece dominance, if you're certain of getting that ball and getting into that shape and getting, you know, finding out what Larkham's got up his sleeve in terms of that shape and breaking down defences over multi-phase, then I think you can go for Ben Healy. It'd be brilliant to have both of them going well. At the minute, Ben Healy's definitely putting his hand up and he's going unbelievably well. Mm. We all know what Joey can do, and if he gets there, he'll challenge massively.
Be interesting, Fiona, to see how it all plays out, because there's obviously a way you can get both Carberry and Healy on the pitch. Munster, at the same time, have plenty of strength and depth now in that back line. So, I mean, there's a combination in there that could really work, and it's up to the coaching staff to try and find it with not all that many games to do so.
Yeah, I think there's that. I think there's the Ireland situation as well, whether they're having a say in if Carberry has to stay at 10 or if he would be better served at full back for Munster.
Would you suspect the IRFU are saying he absolutely goes at 10?
I don't know how much control they have over that, but I would imagine that there is something about it. They brought him to Munster as a 10 to give him that game time going into the 2019 World Cup. So that's the reason that he is down in Munster. So I would imagine there is a hand to play in it. And if they got him back firing like we've seen him fire, he would be a huge addition to Ireland. He just hasn't got there yet.
Hmm. Andrew, did the IRFU ever intervene and say Trimble must play here?
I don't think I was ever high enough up on the IRFU agenda. Okay, first point of the agenda today, Trimble said no one ever. But I think there's enough talent in that back three. Whenever you look at Earls, Zeebo, Mike Healy, there's a lot of guys putting their hands up, and there's a lot of guys who are capable of covering stuff there and having a bit of flexibility. I think the whole point in the move was to demonstrate that Joey Carberry could get game time at 10. And be a real contender to take on the mantle from Johnny Sexton whenever Johnny finally does hang his boots up or just keep pushing him and have more competition at 10. Mm. Even if Ben Healy has a blinder every game from now on, you still need two talented 10s. You still need two good 10s. And you never end up going a full season with one of them. So it's...
yeah.
That debate doesn't really happen. Which one do we go for? You always need both of them. And, you know, one of them might suit a certain game time, game style or kind of... you know, if you're going to approach a game in a certain way, it might suit Ben Healy. Another way, it might suit Joey Carberry. Yeah. But I think a double down on it. He moved to Munster to play 10, keep him at 10. I think it's premature to start talking about that.
Yeah, okay. I can't believe there wasn't a Trimble EGM at least once somewhere along the line.
No one would have attended, Joe.
our rugby coverage is with thanks to Vodafone, sponsors of the Irish rugby team, Team of Us, everyone in. Andrew, curious to talk to you about Ulster. A few interesting talking points here. So they played Benetton on Friday, 28-8. They got the bonus point late on. So perfect start, 15 points from 15. It's been a nice start to the campaign. I was watching on BBC and they're talking to fans going into the game, and obviously they're, you know, awaiting Vermaelen's arrival later on. Although I think he's going to miss the Leinster match. He's playing for the Babas, but they're anticipating his arrival. They like the look of this team. The academy is starting to produce a couple of very good young players, and the overriding sense from fans was, God, we have a real crack at winning a trophy this year. So there's a bit of optimism up Belfast way.
There's always optimism in September or October, Joe. And every preseason you fall for it and you think, you know what, there's a bit of talent in this team. I think we could really do something. And then as the season goes on, often it ends up being the same old story. But I think you're right. I think what's happened, the reason why Ulster supporters are starting to get a bit excited is because there's been injuries and whenever Marcel Cousier went back to South Africa, Nick Timoney stepped up and just did an unbelievably good Marcel Cousier impression for the end of last season. All of a sudden then he's a real contender, and he put his hand up doing really well. He's going to slot into that back row nicely alongside Dwayne Vermeulen when he comes. So there's a bit of excitement there. Dave McCann, another young fella coming through, but there's so much talent coming through in the backs with Ulster. And Nathan Doak is, I think he looks the part. He looks really, really good. Looks very mature. He's 19 years old and he just looks like the picture of composure right there. He's just calmly dictating the pace of the game. Now, I thought the game itself, and I'm interested that you kind of moved away from the game itself, because the game was stagnant. It was poor, to be honest. I think I, as a pundit, as a so-called expert before the game, I talked about two teams. Both teams are here to play rugby. Treviso weren't there to play rugby. They were there to spoil, and they did spoil. And Ulster were quite disjointed in their phase play. A lot of balls coughed up, a lot of inaccuracy. But Nathan Doak just approached the game with a lovely bit of composure. I think he looks like Pienaar. The way he plays, he just looks calm, composed, just organizes the phase play outside him. And especially when Billy Burns was there, because then you've got a lot of experience and you take a bit of pressure off him. But yeah, I think he's someone that Ulster supporters are getting excited about.
Yeah, because Fiona, he came on, Cooney was injured against Glasgow in the first game, and he came on and did very well and scored, nice try, ran a nice line. And obviously then I think they played, Zebre, and that was a fairly facile win. And then starts again on Friday and scores. If people missed the game, scored two tries, four conversions, 18 points, man of the match, 19 years of age, and like, it's a very seamless transition into senior rugby.
Yeah, and even taking control of the kick, and whether that for posts or even for touchline kicks as well, just the maturity and the composure that he does it with was outstanding. And his first try was definitely the pick of the bunch. It was typical scrum half try, trailing on the inside and got it back off Dave McCann, another youngster coming through. And just everything about his game, his run, his kick, his pass game is really impressive. And he brings players into the game. And, you know, obviously it's unfortunate that there's an injury to John Cooney, but Doak has certainly taken his chance, and it'll be a ding-dong battle for the two of them when he gets back.
Any reason in particular Ulster starting to produce some good young players again? I'm not saying it necessarily dried up, Andrew, but maybe for a couple of years there.
I think young fellas are getting opportunities that they wouldn't have otherwise got. Dan McFarland is happy to give a guy a chance. I thought Nathan Doak, he's been talked about for quite a while. I thought he might have got a chance before now. Obviously, you know, Cooney's going very well, so it's difficult to kind of crowbar that opportunity in there. Cooney picks up a knock, and Nathan Doak, who's kind of waited for his turn, then he puts his hand up. Same thing, Jacob Stockdale's missed a couple of games, so Ethan McElroy, he came through last year, got a bit of game time last year, and I don't think we've fully seen what he's capable of doing, but he's got something about him as well. Someone like James Hume, Luke Marshall got injured for long periods last year and still injured this year. James Hume looks like he has kind of learned from that partnership with Stuart McCluskey, and then all of a sudden Stuart McCluskey's not there, so Stuart Moore steps up, and that partnership then kind of shifts a little bit, and James Hume becomes the leader, and he kind of grows into that. And you can see how these guys just drip feed a little bit of experience, and then they grow in confidence. And I think that's a nice model. It's not all by design. Dan McFarlane didn't intend John Cooney to get injured, but he probably thought at some stage there'll be an opportunity here and had Nathan Doak ready.
And so two questions in one then. What is a, you know, realistic expectation, but what is a good season for Ulster this year? And if there is a weakness there that concerns you or you think ultimately will catch them out later on in the season, what is that?
For me, I think the problem with Ulster's season is the restructure, and obviously in a pool with Leinster, and I think Ulster and Munster will always go the way they've always gone in recent years anyway against Leinster. And over the course of the season, they'll always be second best or third best. One of them will be second best. And I think that's just the way that there's too much quality and there's too much depth and there's just too much consistency from the way Leinster play rugby. I don't think you'll ever catch them out over the course of a long season where they can, where, and from an Ulster perspective, where Ulster can get the better of Leinster is in a one-off knockout game. I think, yes, they're definitely capable of doing that. I don't think they can do it over the course of a long season because they just haven't, they're just not the machine that Leinster are, but they can get their game to that level that's capable of really challenging them, shaking them, giving them a bit of uncertainty and planting the seed, and then who knows, maybe getting a result. French teams have done it, Saracens have done it, Ulster, you know, asked massive questions a couple of years ago in the quarterfinal. But I think that's what's realistic. I think Ulster can play Leinster, as they inevitably, I mean, my career, the last 6 years of my career was finished by a Leinster game. It was either knocked out in the Pro 14, whatever it was called through the years, or European Cup. It's just, it always seemed to go the same way. Now, I do think this Ulster team can get a result, but it has to be a one-off game.
Right, okay. Fiona, curious for your thoughts on Billy Burns. In some ways, you know, we talk so much about Sexton and who's next and Carberry features, and I mean, recent Six Nations, it's pretty clear Andy Farrell has plenty of time for Billy Burns and rates him, and he was at the game on Friday. Burns, further to Andrew's point about maybe phase play being a bit disjointed, put in a really good kick for Craig Gilroy's try when there wasn't much else on. And where is he in the pecking order? We don't talk about him much, and then, like I said, previous Six Nations, he pitches up and he gets the nod when Sexton is out. What are you seeing from Billy Burns?
I don't think he's taken his chances at Ireland. You know, he's been given opportunities, he's been given a good bit of game time there, and I just don't think he's taking control at an international level. You know, there's areas of his game, he does some things absolutely amazingly well, like obviously that kick for Gilroy, but I just don't think he controls and brings the forwards into the game. You know, there's just elements of his game that he sits deep at times when he should be attacking the gain line, and I just don't think he's proven himself at international level yet. Whether it's in him or not, I don't know. I haven't seen it. I don't know if that's a bit harsh, but
I
haven't seen it. I just, for me, he's definitely further down the pecking order. But then, No other 10 has really stepped up. You know, Ross Byrne hasn't taken his chance at international level. Then I'm sure we'll talk about Harry when it goes on to Leinster, but he hasn't got there yet, but hasn't really had a consistent amount of form, I suppose, in big games to warrant it either. So, it's very tough. Like, Johnny just is so far out in front and no one's really stepped up.
Yeah. Andrew, your thoughts on Burns?
Yeah, I actually, to be fair, it's hard to disagree with what Fiona's saying there. He hasn't taken his chances with Ireland. Now there's been a handful of them. It's probably coincided with the time whenever Ireland in general has been a bit disjointed, and maybe it's been difficult for him to slot in. But whether he kind of takes advantage of that or whether he kind of goes in there and contributes to that. But Fiona's right. Johnny's so far ahead at the minute, and everybody else is fighting out for second place. And if anybody puts their hand up and puts a string of decent performances together, they'll be right in there. But it's a shame whenever you think about Billy Burns playing for Ireland, you think about him missing touch.
It's terrible, isn't it? I mean, it's the image that lingers on still.
It's so tough, and that's a real challenge, you know, for him. He has to kind of put that to the back of his mind. And if it's in the forefront of our minds when we think of him, then, you know, when he goes out to play for Ireland, he'll I'm sure he thinks about it as well, and there's demons there. So that's a test for him. But he just looks very, very comfortable playing for Ulster. He just looks like he's calling the shots and dictating the pace, and just he can pick two or three different options and pick them really well and execute them really well. That short kicking game, I don't think anybody does that as well as he does. but we just didn't see it for Ireland. Maybe that's because the structure isn't there to allow him to be himself or to contribute in the way he does, or maybe he just, maybe he's in awe of the situation, or maybe it's just a step up intensity, but for whatever reason, he hasn't quite stepped up like we hoped he would.
I don't know if you guys caught the Connacht game as well then. So the script here was supposed to be, well, they lost away to Cardiff, they beat the Bulls in Galway, and then they were going to beat the Dragons and head into the games against Munster and Ulster in reasonable shape, two wins under their belt. Instead, it was Connacht 22, Dragons 35. Dragons certainly, I think, improving a touch this year. We had Andy Friend on the show yesterday, and it was amazingly interesting. So it seems, Fiona, he came on, he said, look, I've watched the game back twice since, and I've had a chat with the staff and one or two of the players, and we overcooked them in training this week, and we did too much, and it was an 8-day turnaround. And he said, there are the essential things you have to do in training, and then there are the things that you want to do as well. And we did a bit too extra in terms of the stuff that we wanted to do on top of the essential stuff. And I was curious, I said, so what are we talking here? How much extra time, or how many extra minutes are we saying across a week? And he was saying, all told across the week, maybe about 100, 140 extra minutes. And that, in his eyes, explained the flatness that he thought was there in the performance. That was amazingly interesting, amazingly open on his part. Got 140 minutes across a week, and suddenly you're a bit flat. That would suggest it's a fine balance.
Well, kudos for him for taking responsibility and being so honest about it. And definitely they lacked the energy in comparison to the previous week, where, you know, all of them were buzzing things. I suppose they got the bounce the previous week, and against the Dragons, you know, they had those unforced errors again, knock-ons at key times, just trying to force it. And this is the annoying thing about Connacht. They are a joy to watch when things are going their way, but it's that lack of consistency. And I'm sure it's infuriating for them and Andy as well, that they can't string a couple of performances together when they know it's in them. Like, you can do it one week and knock them out the next and do it. 140, it does seem a bit much, but that's something that they would have had an experience before of, like, an 8-day turnaround. So surely it should have been in their scheduling and what they were going to do, and players would have been prepared for that and know what their training schedule is like if it's a 6-day turnaround, a 7-day turnaround, or an 8-day turnaround. So I'm sure that wouldn't change too much from season to season. So it depends, I suppose, on the intensity of the time that they were out as well. But it definitely lacked energy, and they were just a shadow of what they had been the previous week.
Yeah, he was saying as well, they're trying to implement a new game plan, and a lot of it is based around being fast. He used the phrase fast, relentless, you know, ball in play for a lot of time. So obviously you need to be top of the ground and full of energy. Andrew, you would have had experience, I'm sure, this of maybe too much time on training ground during the week. I always remember Sean O'Brien after Lions tour criticising Gatland because he felt they had spent too much time on training ground and too many minutes on their feet. Did you find it was a fairly fine balance, or would you notice a big difference on a Saturday or a Friday, depending on what you've done during the week?
Yeah, I think you would notice a difference if I mean, as players, you kind of do what you're told generally. You know, you can manage your training load a little bit with any kind of individual add-ons. I think Andy Friend is very, very switched on. He always comes across very, very well. He's a thoughtful he's a thoughtful coach. He seems to understand the players, and he's really kind of taps into knowing them and knowing how they're not just numbers, they're individuals. He kind of knows the team quite well. I think that's really interesting perspective from him. But him saying 140 minutes, like, that's so that, yes, it's two full sessions, which is, it's very unusual to be that far off what is kind of the sweet spot for an 8-day turnaround. And whether he's taking the blame, or he's kind of just doing his players a solid by saying, listen, you guys are going to get criticism here, I'm going to take the blame here, and just get buy-in from his players, and just get them saying, you know, this is a guy, he stands up for us, and we can buy into this relationship and play for him. There's a lot to that, and there could be some psychology in that, and you've fallen for it, Joe.
Well, the way I was thinking, across 4 days, it's an extra half hour. You know, to just work on some extra stuff that they wanted to work on start of a season. You know, it could be a nice move in the back line, or it could be something that they feel would benefit them. What's an extra half hour? Like, it's such a well-intentioned thing. Like, let's do an extra bit of work. And he was saying, you know, the Connacht lads are all hungry for work and honesty of effort and all that stuff. And what's a half hour here, half hour there? And suddenly end of the week. I mean, it's not like they were crawling onto the pitch either. If we're talking like a degree of flatness almost. And you mentioned the knock-ons, Fiona. He was saying he felt it was visible there, a certain tiredness or lack of sharpness there. And yeah, so I don't know. Most, it's interesting. He could absolutely be taking one for the team there. He could absolutely be.
As you say, Joe, though, that like the way they were going, the way that they looked like they were starting to perform, and then getting beat at home by Dragons is the most Connacht thing you'll ever see.
Yeah, it's killer.
And how frustrating must it be as a Connacht supporter, just feel like we're on the crest of a wave here, we're just starting to kick on, and then that happens. And that has been Connacht's story time and time again. And it must be very, very frustrating. And they're a brilliant team. When they're going well, as Fiona says, they are a great team to watch. It's everybody's second favorite team, obviously, apart from Connacht supporters. But whenever they're going well, it's frustrating to the rest of us as well. So hopefully we'll get back with some sort of consistency and from Connacht.
So, like, would you think the experienced players might have said something during the week? Like, as you got older, Andrew, would you, during a week of training, ever turn around and say, "Oi, Schmidt, no, I'm going in"?
Maybe someone else, not Schmidt. The other thing is, I don't know if we should get too bogged down in the 140 minutes, because that could be, we don't know the intensity of that. We don't know, is that kind of a team session? Is that a unit session? Is that a walkthrough? We don't know what that is.
Yeah.
But he's saying they overtrained, and it certainly looked like it. They looked a little bit flat. So lesson learned from their perspective.
Yeah. Finally then, Zebre at the RDS, 43-7. Jordan Larmour, 13 minutes. Adam Byrne, after 22 months out, 39. Ed Byrne, 43. Sean Cronin, 46. Adam Byrne again, 49. And Kelleher on 64 minutes. They were the tries. Fiona, once Leinster had been so flat and so average at Rodney Parade, and you saw Zebre were coming to the RDS, you just knew this was going to be a painful, painful afternoon for all concerned. And so it proved. There was just very little chance Leinster were going to be sloppy again 2 weeks in a row.
I think it was ominous from the first couple of minutes when Penny went over for his try, and shortly after Larmour went over for his, and they were definitely more ruthless into 22, and like there wasn't as many unforced turnovers as there was in the previous week. You know, but it still felt like, I don't know whether it was because Zebra were the opposition or the crowd didn't get into it, it still felt a little bit flat at times, and like that there was no free-flowing momentum. Now, some of the stuff was brilliant and some of the tries were outstanding, but it just felt really weird at times. And maybe it's because we just expected Leinster to win by so much, and they're kind of the standards we hold them to week in, week out, and particularly when Zebra, who are now bottom of the table, are coming over, and they had 15 changes on their side as well, missing all of their internationals, that they weren't going to be offering up much. But it did take Leinster a little bit of time. Like, you know, they scored two quick tries and then they didn't score till just before half time. Zebra made it hard for them shooting up on the outside, that they couldn't get the ball into those wider channels that they were looking to do. But yeah, like, you know, an improved Leinster performance, but I still think there'll be areas that they're disappointed in. Their line out times again malfunctioned, even though saying that, I think the five of their line tries came off line out. So yeah, there's still areas that they'll look to be sharper on. But again, it's brilliant to see players back, the likes of Adam Byrne, a brace coming back, and he looked sharp. He was hungry for work. And again, so many changes as well. So it'll be interesting to see going forward how many changes, but I think it was gutting for Harry Byrne to have to go off 22 minutes. I would have liked to seen him kind of grow into the game. You know, he didn't have a great opening 22, but I think he would have grown into the game as he was getting quicker ball from the forwards and what he would have been able to do. So unfortunately, we didn't get to see that.
Yeah, and as you said earlier, Sexton came on and was a class act again, the class act amongst Irish number 10s. Andrew, did you watch this, or is your life too short to watch Zebre concede 43 at the RDS?
I watched bits of it. I watched enough to know that I've seen that a million times before, and there's going to be no surprises at the end of this game. But I think to your point, the Dragons, I don't think did any of the other Irish provinces a favour by coming close to Leinster and teaching them a couple lessons and just giving them a bit of a fright, because that's the last thing the rest of us need. If you're going to get close, you have to beat them and do some damage. Otherwise, they'll learn their lessons, they'll sort it out, and they'll get back in the pitch and they'll get back doing what they always do. And yeah, they were as ruthless as always.
As Fiona mentioned, Harry Byrne went off injured after 22 minutes. Have you seen much of Harry Byrne, Andrew? And what are your thoughts, expectations here? I know we're talking quite a bit about tens.
Yeah, I find the Harry Byrne debate quite interesting, because there's been a lot of talk about Harry Byrne, and the contrast to Ross Byrne. Again, two different styles of tens. And I'm not sure what we've seen has kind of been, kind of lived up to the description of what to expect. And even when it does, the problem is with Leinster being such a machine, and just, you know, the Zebra game is a good example of just going through the motions, taking them through phase play, everything clicks, everything just easily clicks. Everybody knows their role so well. And it's just such an effective machine that whenever you slot into 10, even if you play a blinder, it's almost easy to play a blinder in that Leinster team. You kind of take it in the context that it's delivered in, and you sort of go, okay, he was incredible, but look at what's around of him, look at the structure, and look how well organized that team is. A lot of 10s could do that. Now, I don't mean that to take everything with a pinch of salt. He's a very talented youngster. Well, he's not as young as, to be fair, when we started talking about him, but he's in the Joey Carberry mold. He's got a bit of X factor, a bit of footwork, and he's got something special. That something special is great, but it has to be shown at the highest level. And I don't think we've seen it even really in Europe with Harry Byrne or maybe in Interpros. But no doubt, I think we're all still hoping and thinking all the talk will come to fruition. Hopefully it does. Hopefully we get to see it.
Yeah, for sure. So you're telling me if even at the Trimble EGM, they said, we want Trimble in as Leinster's 10 for the Zebra match, you could probably do a job.
I reckon I could. Joe, you could do a job. You go 9, I'll go 10.
By the way, Dan Levy played 50 minutes. That's just his fifth start since March 2019, that injury. So he's coming along well as well. Any other thoughts from the weekend, Fiona? The United Rugby Championship is settling in, I suppose.
Think some of the South African teams starting to show a little bit of form. 2 wins and a draw and a very close loss. I think the Lions were a little bit hard done by with that Dragons trot, or that Glasgow try, whether it was over the line or not. But it's great to see them putting in a couple of performances, and hopefully they'll only grow stronger. And I know they're playing their home games in Italy before December, but hopefully that they'll get back down to South Africa and get some games in there, and we'll really see their worth in the competition.
Yeah. What about you, Andrew? Is it kind of re-enthused you about this tournament and its many different names, or where are you?
I was worried, very worried up until the weekend about the South African teams, because this is like last crack of the whip. Let's make this league work. Let's make it dynamic. Let's make it exciting. Let's make it competitive. And let's not just make it as typical as it's always been. Leinster run away with it, and then they get a home playoff, and then they get a final and they win. And that's just kind of the model for the league. Occasionally Scarlets go well, or occasionally Glasgow goes well, or occasionally maybe Munster or Ulster go well. But it's kind of a little bit, it has been stagnant for a long time. And now these monsters are South African sides are coming in, and I was worried that we weren't going to get the impact that we were hoping for, and they turned up just in time. And again, we desperately, anybody who's a rugby supporter, anybody who wants to see domestic rugby or provincial rugby, kind of week to week club rugby going well and being the exciting brand that we all know it can be, we need the South African teams competing well. To see them going well at the weekend is great, and it gives us a bit of hope for the season.
Okay, very good. Fiona Coughlin, Andrew Trimble, brilliant stuff, guys. Thanks a mil.
Cheers, Joe.
Bye.
Monday Night Rugby on Off the Ball.
With Vodafone, official sponsors of the Irish rugby team. Team of us, everyone in.